from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Maybe the humanitarian crisis is easing in Iraq, but ISIS, or the Islamic State, keeps on reaching, pushing, taking turf. What should the U.S. do? Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has stirred the pot, saying that President Obama's mantra, "Don't do stupid stuff," is not enough. Get tough advocates say we should be bombing from Syria almost to Iran, taking ISIS on, taking it out. Others argue for restraint. This hour on Point, American power abroad, now, and what to do or not do in Iraq. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How heavily should the United States get involved in the big fight now in Iraq? What should our grand strategy be on deploying American power? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from Washington is Dion Nissenbaum, national security reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He's been all over the fast-moving story in Iraq. Dion, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
So is it clear? We heard Secretary of Defense Hagel has said that we've sent out Green Beret Special Forces, and they've reported back. There aren't so many Yazidi left up there. They're finding their way off of Mount Sinjar. Is it clear that American airstrikes broke the siege and they're fine?
I don't think that's entirely clear yet. The assessment team spent 24 hours in the mountains, and you know what they concluded was that there were far less Yazidis up there, just a few thousand in the mountain. There were thoughts that there could be 30,000, 35,000 up there. So the sense is that most of them have been able to escape north through kind of a safe corridor that was opened by the Kurds. We're still waiting to sort of ground truth out in Iraq and talk to people that can give us a better sense of what's going on. But certainly from the Pentagon perspective, they are saying that a rescue mission that they had been fast-tracking is now probably not going to happen.
So a pause on that front. What about the other fronts that President Obama alluded to when he spoke to the nation? Erbil, the capital of the Kurds, Baghdad itself. What's the U.S. been doing in terms of airstrikes?
Well, there's been a limited number of airstrikes. The focus of the airstrikes has really been around Erbil. They've been small, targeted airstrikes that have hit things like mortar places and artillery and armored vehicles. So it's been very small. But the effort right now that the United States is leading is to try and fast track military aid for the Kurds. The French are now stepping in to provide ammunition, small arms. The Kurds are asking for some more advanced weapons, and right now the focus essentially is on getting the Kurdish forces the ammunition and firepower they need so they can mount a counteroffensive against the Islamic State, and that's the immediate focus at this point.
I'm reading that the United States has something like 1,000 military personnel in total in Iraq at this point with the Kurds. If we arm them up, if we send in trainers, and there's talk of that as well, are we also looking at continued air cover, air strikes, to help them push back on ISIS, the Islamic State?
Well, that's the policy question, I think, that still needs to be addressed here. The president laid out these two very limited goals for the operation as it stands now. One was to break the siege around the Yazidis and prevent the Islamic State from wiping them out on what he said would be an act of genocide. And then the other was to protect Americans in Erbil. We believe there are about 200 Americans in Erbil, and the other 800 are in the other parts of the country. And that's the limited goal of the operation now. And we don't have a statement from the president to take a broader approach to launching a counteroffensive against the Islamic State. And the military and the White House have said this is not a broad-based campaign to fight the Islamic State. And I think where the debate stands now is whether or not the United States should go that route.
Part of what the president said was that if Baghdad got its government act together, the United States might be more supportive. Now they have a new prime minister, Haider al-Abadi. Maliki still, who knows what his status is, but it looks like they're trying to respond. Is that a threshold that is being opened up with a change in government leadership there for more American military aid to the Baghdad government?
That's to be determined. As you know, forming a government in Iraq takes a long time, and even though we've got a prime minister named, we don't have a government yet, and that could take 30 days or more for that to happen. So the focus now is primarily on arming the Kurds, and my sense is that the U.S. military and the U.S. government are essentially using that as something of a carrot for Baghdad to say, look, here's what we can do to help you fight the Islamic State if you get your act together and get a government that we can work with. But that still has to be determined.
Diane Nissenbaum, this engagement, anything but capped at this point, not open-ended, but who knows where it goes. Diane, thanks for your reporting, Diane, and thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Diane Nissenbaum is national security reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Here was the president speaking on Saturday, emphasizing the role U.S. troops will not play in Iraq.
I've been very clear that we're not going to have U.S. combat troops in Iraq again. We are going to maintain that because we should have learned a lesson from our long and immensely costly incursion in Iraq.
But what if the Islamic State, this kind of new factor here, looks that way anyway, continues to grow on Sunday the next day? Senator John McCain, Republican from Arizona, member of the Senate Committee on Armed Services, talked with CNN, called the president's strategy in Iraq ineffective, laid out what he thinks the U.S. should do.
This is turning into, as we had predicted for a long time, a regional conflict, which does pose a threat to the security of the United States of America. I would be rushing equipment to Erbil. I would be launching airstrikes not only in Iraq but in Syria against ISIS. They have erased the boundaries between Iraq and Syria. I would be providing as much training and equipment as I can to the Kurds.
Bombs away, said Senator McCain, up to and into Syria. We will hear in a few minutes from a former advisor to Senator John McCain. With me right now in the studio is Barry Posen, professor of political science at MIT, director of the Security Studies program there, and author of the big new book, Restraint, a New Foundation for U.S. Grand Strategy. Barry Posen, welcome as always to On Point.
Hello, Tom.
Let's step back from Iraq for 1 second and put this in a bigger frame. And you say that there's a sort of view of the world that's driven a lot of U.S. military engagement that we've now come kind of to the end of. You call it liberal hegemony, the idea that we could sort of remake the world in our liberal democratic and mold, and that we can't afford it, that it won't go on. What's the alternative framework, and what would it mean for Iraq?
Well, I wish I could say that the liberal hegemony grand strategy is going to go away, but it's so deeply embedded in the American national security elite, I think they're going to continue to pursue it. I hope that my book, Restraint, provides a bit of criticism. The United States basically came out of the Cold War as the most powerful state in the world, and it came out of the Cold War with the clear perception that liberalism, the Western democracies, had won the Cold War decisively and that we were the wave of the future. People, you know, even a well-known writer, Francis Fukuyama, talked about the end of history. So the United States basically set out to remake the world in its image. There was nobody really in the way to stop us, and we thought we had the right ideas. Now, my argument is that this has proven costly. It was not necessary, but it's also proven costly, and it's also proven futile. And there's reasons why it's proven costly and futile, and reasons why I think it's going to get more costly and more futile. Great powers tend to balance against you. Great powers tend to try and recover their power to get some elbow room for themselves. Allies don't carry their own weight because they're happy to accept your help and not carry their own weight.
So what are you saying? Come home, America. Let the world go on its way. We've got big oceans on either side. Who cares?
Well, I think there's two points that you're making. One is the underlying facts of the case for the United States. The United States is one of the most inherently secure powers in world history. We have still the largest GDP in the world. We're going to be one of the two or three largest GDPs for many, many years to come, maybe, you know, forever. It's hard to say. People think the Chinese will catch us. It's a great GDP. It's dynamic. The United States has oceans to the left and right, big ones. It has weak neighbors to the north and south. It has nuclear weapons, has a great military industrial base, and it has a nuclear deterrent.
9/11.
Yeah. The United States is really a very, very secure state. 9/11 is an interesting it's a problem, and it's a counterexample, and it's the debate that's often raised. What is national security about? It's about threats to sovereignty. It's about threats to territorial integrity. It's about threats to power position. And it's about threats to safety. Now, typically, states have been willing to actually take risks with their safety to pursue the other things. My point is, in terms of territorial integrity, in terms of sovereignty, in terms of power position, the United States is in really, really good shape. Now, that doesn't mean the United States doesn't have security interests, but it takes big things to affect the security of the United States.
Do we need to take out, some are saying, the Islamic State?
Well,
ISIS.
You're jumping the gun here. We basically have three interests, at least I identify three interests. One is the enduring interest to prevent the rise of a hegemon that control all of Eurasia. In other words, a power that would be so much bigger than the United States and have so many more options than the United States that our lives would really change.
China?
This is what we've tried to prevent in the past, and this is what we should try and do in the future. So we should keep a weather eye on China and its ambitions. Second, there are two related things that do affect the safety of the United States. One is nuclear proliferation. The other is terrorism. Now, under the strategy of liberal hegemony, we've pursued absolute, total kinds of solutions to these problems. And my argument is that the solutions have not solved the problem, and they've made the problem worse. The United States has been trying to slay terrorists hip and thigh for 11 years. Mm-hmm. And here we are looking at an ISIS state. And no one seems to ask the question, if we're looking at thousands of new jihadis in Iraq, in Syria, right, after 11 years of being on the offense, maybe we should ask the question of what 11 years on the offense actually bought us.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American power abroad and what to do or not do now in Iraq. Barry Posen is with us. He is international professor of political science at MIT, author of the new book, Restraint, A New Foundation for U.S. Grand Strategy. His approach right there in the title, and you can hear it. We're going to hear in a moment from a former senior policy advisor to John McCain with a different view of things. On NPR's Morning Edition today, retired General Michael Barbero, three tours in Iraq, laid out a big vision of going heavy after ISIS, starting from the air.
We've got the air power. It would take a strategy to attack the ISIS bases, their infrastructure, and their forces, their command and control nodes. I'm sure we understand where they are. And to really degrade the ISIS capability. They are not 10 feet tall. They're very capable. But however, they're not 10 feet tall. So concerted airstrikes along the depth of the ISIS forces would be effective.
How far would he take it? Well, he would take it far across a big arc through Iraq and right on into Syria.
It all starts and emanates from Syria. So if we're serious about defeating this ISIS threat, then you have to target the length and breadth of their network. And that takes you back to some of their bases and roots in Syria.
Retired General Michael Barbero talking with David Greene on Morning Edition, NPR this morning. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, South Carolina, talked to CNN last week saying, hey, look, do it by air or you'll do it with boots.
If we do not contain this now and hit them using air power, this goes on 6 months, and they go into Lebanon and eventually to Jordan, you're probably going to have boots on the ground. Nobody wants that. But the longer it goes and the stronger they get, the more aggressive the response. This doesn't get better by ignoring it.
Doesn't get better by ignoring it. Barry Posen, we're going to hear in just a moment from a former McCain advisor. Take your view of the world. Restraint is what you think we ought to bring to our vision of American power projection in the world. Here's the Islamic State. Here's Iraq. What do we do, Barry?
Well, I think we do have to take the Islamic State seriously, precisely because we have had the experience of 9/11, and I talk about this in the book. Mm-hmm. But we also have to acknowledge that sometimes fighting on the offense can make the adversary stronger because it brings recruits to their cause. And as I said earlier, we have to think about an 11 years of being on the offense, and yet here we are again talking
more than
about
that
fighting.
That's right. 2014.
Actually, it's 2014. It's more than 11 years, right? So we have to consider that. So my view is that we have to take ISIS seriously, but the last thing we need to do is to leap in, start bombing, try and drive them into basements or wherever we think we're going to do, and then hope that everything's going to turn out all right, right? I mean, all of these air power solutions for ISIS neglect one fundamental problem, which is someone was going to have to occupy that real estate and set up a government if you can knock ISIS over.
I mean, after the bombs
yes.
fall.
Yes, and ISIS has been successful in this area All of the pundits and analysts agree. ISIS has been successful because it has found allies. It has found political support among the Sunni populations, the Sunni Arab populations.
I mean, it's found some allies, but it's cut a lot of heads off as well.
Well, you're talking about yes, they do cut heads off, but it's everyone agrees that they made common cause with disaffected Sunni Arabs, and not just as individuals, but as tribes, as groups, as political organizations,
former Iraqi military members.
All the people, right, that the Iraqi state has been unable to incorporate, unable to promise a real share of power to, and which I think is just baked in the cake, right? So nobody can occupy this area. The Shiites are not going to be welcome there. They're not going to convert locals to the cause. The Kurds are not going to be welcome there, and they know they're not going to convert locals to the cause. So you can bomb and bomb and not solve this problem. So my argument is what you need to do is contain, right? I think there's like four things you need to do.
How do you contain without bombing? I mean, we bombed ISIS when it got close to Erbil.
Bombing is a tactic. What you're hearing from the likes of General Barbary and General Admiral McCain, for Admiral Wannabe McCain, is the idea that there should be a full court press in terms of a major bombing.
Root them out. Take them out.
As if ISIS were Nazi Germany or if ISIS were the Iraqi state. These people are burrowed in. They're clever. They blend in with the population. The idea that there's
Been in Iraq for 3 weeks. How burrowed can they be?
They're from Iraq. Why do you think the leader's name is al-Baghdadi? This is a guy who was
right.
These are fantasies that are purveyed to make this thing simpler, seem simpler than it is, right? So what we need to do, and I think you know the president has tried in his way to do it, is try and build a kind of a ring of containment around these people to strengthen those who are willing to defend themselves, right? And then kind of see what you can do in terms of coming to some kind of strategy that will degrade, erode, whatever. So you need to build bulwarks around them, strengthen those who are willing and able to fight.
Kurds,
which is why you're fighting with the Kurds, right? And by the way, the Kurds didn't need very much strengthening. That's a whole nother story, right? But strengthen those that are around them. Study the hell out of this organization. This idea that we understand it so well.
Yeah.
If we understand things that are happening in Iraq so well, how could we have a four-day panic about these refugees up on this mountain, these people?
Yeah.
And then suddenly it turns out to be all wrong, right? I mean, there is clearly not a deep knowledge of this organization. We're always surprised at its successes. So we have to understand it. So we need intelligence bases to work from, right? We need to try and divide and conquer. We need to think up strategies to peel away Sunni Arab support from these people. And this is not a matter of a magical change of government in Baghdad. This is a long-term, difficult process. And the fourth thing, and I agree here, we may need to strike selectively.
Okay.
Like if we're helping the Kurds to defend particular pieces of real estate, the judicious admixture of tactical air power can be helpful.
Okay. I mean,
and if you really locate some conspiracy, right, that is very dangerous to the United States, and you have to shoot, then you'll shoot.
I mean, you may be right that long term, this and that, but they're moving fast. I mean, don't call them Nazi Germany, but Blitzkrieg seems applicable here. They have really been on the move. A lot of turf has gone their way.
They've
in
been
a hurry.
Successful in places where they have fellow travelers, where there are large numbers of disaffected Sunni.
The
Arabs.
Heads are still cut off.
That's where. Look, I'm not going to play comparative decapitation with you about whose heads are going to be cut off. It's a terrible and terrorizing group. But the idea that these people are being successful because of their size and their tactical acumen is not true. They have allies. We have to peel those allies away from them.
Point taken. Hold the thought. A couple of calls and we'll go to Corey Shockey in California. Keith in Iowa Falls. Iowa, Keith, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. I read on Wikipedia that a high estimate of the number of IS fighters in Iraq is 6,000.
I read that as well a couple of days ago, but I should note that the latest reports I'm seeing are 14,000-15,000. So they're gaining or claiming adherence. But your point, Keith?
My point is that the Iraqi army has 250,000. Along with about 500,000 reservists.
Whatever that actually means, and where does that take you?
Well, it tells me that if the Iraqis don't have the will to defend their own country, then nothing we do in the long run will make a difference, will it?
This is Barry Posen's point. After the bombs fall, who's going to bring some kind of order? Who's going to govern? And right now, that has proven to be a big problem. It's a good point. Well taken. Let us hold it. One more. Diane in Summertown, Tennessee. Diane, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that might doesn't make right, but it keeps the terrorists away from your door.
So what, bombs away? Is that your view, Diane?
Well, I think we're already involved, you know, to the point where we've been there 11 years, you know, and they're not exactly favoring us, and they're going to, eventually they're going to come for us, so...
I know what you mean, but we were there for 11 years. We got out. We spent a lot of blood and treasure. It didn't fix it. Does that mean maybe a course correction, Diane?
Well, I think that we should figure out a way to do it that it's going to be more effective, that, you know, we're going to be able to stop the terrorists from continuing what they're doing.
Yep. Diane, I really appreciate your call. Thank you very much. From Summertown, Tennessee, they're Barry Posen, stand by. With us right now from Glen Ellyn, California, Corey Shockey, research fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution, former senior policy advisor to the McCain-Palin campaign. Corey Shockey, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
What do you think we ought to be doing now and in the weeks ahead, months ahead, in Iraq?
Well, I agree with much of what Barry said. The United States actually does have a grand strategy, and it's shaping the world in our image. It's creating space for governance that respects individual human rights and cares about law in society.
What Barry calls liberal hegemony. He doesn't mean liberal conservative, but liberal democracy, an open civil society.
We didn't just start doing this at the end of the Cold War. Actually, Germany and Japan after World War II are the two greatest instances of our success. So I actually think we need a foreign policy that cares about 170,000 people killed in Syria and that doesn't just care about Kurds being protected in Iraq, but cares about Sunni being protected in Iraq and Shia being protected in Iraq. Because all American wars really, as Barry argues so terrifically in his book, are wars of choice, the American people actually have to be engaged in supporting it. And we reduce resistance to what we want to have happen in the world by caring about other people's well-being. And so that argues for doing something. But I agree that the use of military force ought to be a last resort. It ought to be a hesitant resort. I have grave doubts about the approach the president has taken, which is using military force to affect the symptoms of what ISIS is traumatizing people in Iraq and Syria with, instead of dealing with a cause. So it does seem to me if you're actually going to get engaged in this problem, you ought to do more than on the margins affect ISIS's ability to go into the Kurdish territory. You ought actually to drive ISIS into a position where the Iraqi army and others can defeat it.
What does that mean? Are you on board with what we just heard John McCain saying, sort of go after it, root and branch, or retired General Barbero saying, take the bombing all the way to its bases in Raqqa, in Syria, go after it wherever it is, you know, flatten it? Is that the recipe?
Well, I do think that's the recipe. I don't think we need to be the major force doing it.
Who else can do it?
A lot of people can do it. They're, as Barry said, they're not 10 feet tall. The Iraqi army broke and ran because they actually don't support the government, which has not been a force for good inside Iraq. So first of all, political attention to governance is a huge part of what American foreign policy should be in these
President countries. Obama's been very loud on that lately, and he's got a change of leadership in Baghdad.
He's been very loud on it for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
He's been utterly silent on it since 2008. And as Barry points out, you don't do this overnight. You do it by involvement, careful and consistent involvement over time. And we don't have to do it by ourselves. The governments of Turkey, the governments of Saudi Arabia, we have lots of countries in the region that care about this problem, that feel threatened by ISIS, and that can be a major force in helping us defeat them.
When you look at the speed of the ISIS advance, I mean, my sense is that if we wait on Turkey and Saudi Arabia and anybody else, ISIS is going to, I mean, they've already carved out a caliphate. They've declared it. They've got the biggest dam in Iraq. They've got oil under their wing now. They've got a big chunk of Syria. I mean, what does it take to get the Saudis or others to step up? Will they really do it before the Islamic State is a fixed reality?
Well, the Islamic State has picked up a lot of ground in the last 6 months, but we've been doing nothing for years on this, right? This problem started with peaceful pressure by Syrians against their government for accountability, right? And so, yes, they've picked up a lot of ground, but not, as Barry says, just in places where they had Sunni ally, right? They are also picked up ground in Syria. They also picked up ground in the Kurdish territories. So it's not just having a receptive audience and a support base. It's also that, right, they have been extraordinarily effective in broadcasting through social media and through our own media that resistance against them is futile.
What would you do in the next month? We heard Lindsey Graham suggesting that if we don't fix this soon, it's going to require boots on the ground.
I don't think that's true. I do actually think strengthening forces to push back against ISIS can help on this. That one of the mistakes of the Obama administration's foreign policy is believing that if we step back, others will step forward and solve problems. And that's mostly not true. Mostly when we step back, others step back further. And so conveying the political message, because, of course, wars are about achieving political objectives, conveying the political message that we will not allow ISIS to control territory and that we will work with the affected societies and the affected governments in order to keep consistent pressure on them to push them back and destroy them, that will begin to give heart to resistance to them. And that's what's been lacking inside Iraq, and that's what's been lacking inside Syria.
We'll look at exactly what that might mean. Jeff in Acton, Massachusetts is calling. Jeff, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to really encourage all of your listeners to watch something I watched last night, which was a five-piece video thing on Vice.com, where basically they went into ISIS-controlled territory, drove around. I think why I mention that is, you know, it takes this very, I think, what is usually portrayed as kind of an abstract, you know, villain or force that we're confronting, and makes it very real. And when you see people that have been thrown into, you know, a Sharia court and jailed because of alcohol, or you see, you know, 8-year-olds who are, you know, chanting death to America and, you know, basically that they're very happy to be part of IS, I think it just brings home the fact that, you know, all of our abstract talk about airstrikes and...
Jeff, forgive me. Our time is short before the break. I mean, I don't think it's fully abstract. How many times do I have to say severed heads? There are a lot. But what does that mean for American policy? Do you want American air bombing going on there again? Do you want American troops in there? So you've seen vividly, thanks to Vice, what's going on in ISIS territory. So what?
So what I think my point is that, you know, to understand and to just be aware of how people in that area are responding, and, you know, that airstrikes are, they may impact things, but the way that, you know, just to have that enter into our thoughts about how it's going to impact the people there on the ground, basically.
Fair enough. I mean, a lot of communities appear to be responding with some degree of terror, others ready to resist. My guest, Barry Posen, says... support them, back them, Kurds and more. I guess Corey Shockey says something similar. I want to get both of you engaged here and see where the subtle lines of distinction may be. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about American power abroad and what to do or not do now in Iraq. Corey Shockey is with us, research fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution, former senior policy advisor to the McCain-Palin campaign. Barry Posen is with me in the studio, Ford International Professor of Political Science at MIT, author of the big new book, Restraint, A New Foundation for U.S. Grand Strategy. Let's say we do it. How do we apply it? Pentagon's been talking about what's happened already with American airstrikes there, humanitarian aid and more. On Monday, here was the Joint Staff Director of Operations, William Mayville, detailing U.S. humanitarian action in Iraq over the weekend.
On Thursday, C-17 and C-130 air crews began a coordinated series of humanitarian assistance airdrop missions to provide aid to the refugees on Sindar Mountain.
Now we're told, thanks to breaking that siege, many of them are out of there. We don't need to send more U.S. troops or Green Beret or airstrikes in an operation to remove them. There have been other strikes as well. William Mayville was very clear in what they have accomplished and what they will not accomplish.
U.S. airstrikes in northern Iraq have slowed ISIL's operational tempo and temporarily disrupted their advances toward the province of Erbil. However, these strikes are unlikely to affect ISIL's overall capabilities or its operations in other areas of Iraq and Syria.
It's going to take more than what we've been up to lately, or less if you've got another view of what we ought to do there if we just get out. The president this spring, let's step way back. Here was his big take on what the American posture ought to be when it comes to military action abroad.
America must always lead on the world stage. If we don't, no one else will. The military that you have joined is and always will be the backbone of that leadership. But U.S. military action cannot be the only or even primary component of our leadership in every instance. Just because we have the best hammer does not mean that every problem is a nail.
President Obama speaking not just to any audience. That was commencement at West Point. I want to come to the wisdom of our guest in just a moment. A couple calls first. John in Shelby, Michigan. John, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, and very interesting show. Comment on my part is quite simply that Vietnam and many other conflicts have taught us we can defeat armies, but not philosophies. The biggest problem we will always face is that we are imposing the American culture in areas of the world where it's not well received. And if we wish to do something good, what we must do is, from a more humanitarian perspective than a military perspective, which is unwinnable.
So is it okay with you if the Islamic State takes over and establishes itself in Iraq, Syria, beyond, John? Is that okay?
How can we prevent what we cannot control on a daily basis forever and into infinity? It's impossible. But we have to deal with what is there, and it's a very mixed up and unwinnable situation. What we have to do is step back from it and look at a different strategy, because this one is absolutely we're unable to win it, and we never will, and I don't have the answer,
yep.
But I would comment that it is unwinnable, and what we're doing is obviously not working.
John, I think a lot of people share a big chunk of that perspective. One more, Phil in Augusta, Georgia. Phil, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think, Phil?
Well, I was actually pretty similar to your last caller. There are all different types of religious states around the world. We have a Jewish state. There's a Catholic. You can go to Tibetan or whatnot. I say let ISIS, who already has, or the Islamic State, who already has economic power, already has military power. They're getting stronger socially. And what they seem to want is political power in the region where they already control the territory. I say that it doesn't matter how many bombs we drop on that area. I spent 3 years of my life in that country. No matter how many bombs we drop there, we're not going to get the desired result that we
want. Phil, you served in the U.S. military in Iraq. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I did.
Well, so you've had a front row seat. Let us pick it up. Barry, there's an American soldier who fought in Iraq and says we can't let him have it. We can't change it. Can we let an Islamic State be founded, sort of blow past established borders? Okay, imperial legacy, whatever. Settle in, and that's okay?
Well, I guess the question is the definition of okay. I mean, as I said earlier, the main and the point you started with when you invoked 9/11, the main issue we have here from an American point of view is really what threat does ISIS pose to the safety of the United States, right? And the way they could pose a threat to the safety of the United States is if they live there comfortably, unobserved by us, right, training terrorists, dispatching them into the North America or Europe to do their evil deeds. Now,
so beheadings and crucifixions and the rest there, not enough to justify American involvement?
No, it's not enough to justify American involvement. Now, if Americans in their, you know, from a national security point of view, now if Americans in their, you know, in their own political discussions about life abroad want to take up the question of beheadings and want to take up the question of human rights and want to take that question up and then want to have a discussion about how much American military power they want to commit mm-hmm. to trying to reorganize these societies, which is a big and long-term project and a bloody and a costly one, as we've learned to our peril. Mm-hmm. If the American people in their infinite wisdom wish to support their leaders in doing this, then what is Barry Posen going to have to say about it? Nothing. I can advise them that they're going to be very sad about the results, that they're not going to succeed. Right?
So what would you do? You draw a circle around the Islamic State, and when they stepped out of it, bomb them then, but leave them alone inside that, you know, if they settle into some fixed region?
Surround, contain, surveil, and if need be, attack, right? United States of America is spending something like $70 billion a year on intelligence, much of it focused on protecting the United States of America against terrorism. A lot of this is in the nature of investment. We've been doing this, as you said, since 2001. Yep. Almost $1 trillion.
We've spent on
almost $1 trillion on intelligence, not all directed
just
against
intelligence
this problem.
Before the military ops.
Well, a third of the intelligence information spending is about tactical intelligence to direct military operations.
Yeah.
But the point is, and this is not including homeland security. It's not including airport security.
Yeah, but so what?
Does
Baghdad go? Do the oil fields go? Is that okay?
Hold it a second.
Okay.
Right. A question was asked a long time, many minutes ago about how is it possible that the Iraqi military can't defend, or the Kurdish military can't defend, right? Well, even though many divisions in the Iraqi army folded up, if you believe what is said, there are 8 or 9 divisions left in the Iraqi army. Now, how is it that none of those forces have been marshaled for counterattack against the Sunnis? The Kurdish Peshmerga, the lowest estimate out there is about 100,000 Peshmerga. And this argument that the Peshmerga have no weapons, it's preposterous. Go waste a half hour of your time doing a Google image search on Peshmerga and look at picture after picture.
They've lost territory. They had ISIS only, we were told, something like 20 miles from Erbil.
Look at the journalistic coverage of how some of this territory was lost. It was territory that they moved into after the Baghdad forces left, that they barely fortified themselves, and that if the news reports are to be believed, they barely bothered to fight for. Right? Everybody out there has their own interests. So my argument is this. Mm-hmm. Kurds will fight hard for Kurdistan.
For what they really care about.
Shiites will fight hard to defend the areas where they're a majority in southern Iraq. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that 10,000 dedicated Sunni fanatics are going to govern 15 million Shiites who don't want to be governed by them, who are supported by Iran and
Sunnis
everybody else.
Sunnis governed them before. Saddam Hussein was the nameplate. Okay.
We knocked that over. All I'm saying is there's 8 or 9 divisions, probably 100,000 troops, right? Most of them Shiite, and they're going to fight for what's theirs. Nobody is going to fight for what isn't theirs.
Don't fight nature.
Iraqi communities fight best in units that are homogeneous, fighting for their home turf.
Which means no Iraq, because
that's exactly what it means. It means that Iraq is the fiction that it's been since we knocked over Saddam Hussein.
Hal in East Boston. Corey, I'm going to come to you, but first, Hal, you're on the air.
Greetings, Tom. Just a comment on this all-important and troubling subject. As much as an anti-war person as I am, and with me that goes back to Vietnam, you can count this lifelong liberal Democrat as being on the side of the McCains and the Grahams.
In what? In the case of the Islamic State in particular, Hal? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I think we have to engage them, but engage them with our superior technology, and to keep them to reverse their successes, and to persuade them that what their real goal, the universalization of Islam, has no future. I think there are many liberal elements in all the Muslim countries who tremble at the thought of this caliphate being extended over that whole area.
Why does this movement take a lifelong peacenik and turn you into a global warrior?
Well, because I perceive that their stated ambitions, the stated ambitions of radical Islam, are not limited to just the Middle East. they're worldwide. They're talking about a worldwide caliphate, and that includes here. The radical Islamists are beginning to swarm in Europe, and that must not be permitted to happen here.
You think that's ever going to happen in on your block, Hal, in this country?
Well, look, the capacity for them to make trouble is certainly obvious in Europe, where they gain enough numbers and enough fanaticism.
Hal, I appreciate your call. If I may, let me take it to Corey Shockey in California. Corey, you hear Barry Posen's draw circle around them. Don't try and create something that doesn't that's not going to stand because it's not supported by local populations. We can live with an Islamic State if it means kind of a Sunni governed area of what we have called Iraq. If they get out of line, bomb the edges or but that'll do. What do you say, Corey?
I think it is a misconception that Sunni in Syria, in Iraq, in Turkey, and other places support the kind of terrorizing jihadism that ISIS represents.
Well, some do. Enough do that they have guys on the pickup trucks with those big 50-caliber machine guns.
And yet, enough Sunni supported the vision we had of an Iraq that was peaceful, ruled by law, and politically inclusive, that they voted for it in the parliamentary elections.
Yeah.
And so it's true that they aren't winning this, and it's true that we aren't winning this. But it's not true, as Tom suggested, that this is unwinnable. It is what the winning strategy is: slowly and patiently standing by people willing to do this fighting, encouraging them that we will help them build a state that is in our interests and in their interests. And if you do that over time, you don't actually have to rush in and deal with the symptoms like, dropping water to people on Mount Sinjar. The control of territory, as Barry suggested, actually really matters. And I don't believe that an ISIL that we draw a circle around and allow to terrorize the people who fall under their control isn't going to be a threat to us. I think it actually is a threat to us.
So what would you do? Do we need to give more support to the Kurds? Do we need to give more support to the new Baghdad prime minister? What should we do militarily, specifically, Corey?
Yeah. So a couple of things. First, we ought to help the countries in the region that are at risk: Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey. If we had done this a year and a half ago, you could have done a lot that was interesting to help the Iraqis. Now the Iraqi government has lost legitimacy, deservedly lost legitimacy. So we need to start working with Sunni that will defend their neighborhood, with Kurds who will defend their neighborhood, with Shia, right? The defense of Baghdad is actually really important now.
What does working with mean? It can sound a little euphemistic. Do you mean Green Berets at their side? Do you mean American munitions stacked up for them? Do you mean American air cover?
It doesn't have to be American, right? But yes, you need to do those things. You need to help the people who want to drive ISIS out of their territory. But we don't need to be the people who do it. Lots of countries in the region can do it, too.
You keep saying that, but I don't see their convoys lined up anywhere.
Well, think about the Libya case. Actually, you got lots of assistance from Qatar, from the UAE, from the Saudis, others.
But look at the Islamic State right now. I mean, it's just happening. And the U.S. is the only one that I can see operating there along with the Kurds who's doing anything.
We are the only one, but we don't need to be the only one. In fact, the United States serves our interests best when we build a coalition of people willing to help solve the problem. And we just don't bother to do it most of the time.
Well, we did it in the big invasion of Iraq. Are you saying go back to the Iraq war model and just do more of it?
I'm saying go back to the 1991 Iraq war model.
H.W. Bush.
Yeah, where we got a division of Egyptian troops, where we got a division of Saudi troops.
You're talking all on war again, though.
Well, no, I'm not saying we need divisions of all of those troops, but I am saying that getting other countries and other societies that have an interest in the outcome that we want is a fundamental challenge for the United States. And we are mostly just too lazy to do it. We rush in at the last minute and do everything ourselves, and that is not a cost-effective strategy. Moreover, it's more difficult to sustain if you haven't built in the support of neighboring countries that share your interests.
Boy, but we did a lot. Corey, stand by. We've got 1 minute, Barry. Final thought here on a decision that Americans, sooner or later, are probably going to be party to making about our engagement here.
It seems to me that Americans are entitled to look at the long effort that the United States made in Iraq to implement the policies that Corey is talking about and observe that that effort failed. And it failed on many levels. And it particularly failed on the political level. If you read U.S. Department of Defense reports on progress in Iraq year after year, up to the moment we left, those reports frankly admit, buried in the middle of the paragraphs, that little political progress towards reconciliation was made, right? And that was on our watch. This was true when we were there in strength, when we were there in weakness, right? So it we have run the social science experiment. We spent a lot of money on it. The experiment failed. Let's not run it again.
Big decisions in front of the United States. Once again, we'll see where they go. Corey Shockey at Stanford's Hoover Institution. Corey, thank you for joining us.
Been a pleasure.
Barry Posen, author of Restraint. Thank you very much for being here, Barry.
Thank you, Tom. Good to see you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.